Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets Live. My name is Paul Earle. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to equity analyst and stock markets commentator Paul Scott to discuss all things small caps. So welcome, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. And sorry I was slightly late. It's all my fault, viewers.
no problem. Anyway, yeah, we've had a really busy last 7 days. But before we just sort of run through some stocks, is there anything you've been buying over or selling over the past week?
I actually bought some Wise, the financial, the large sort of challenger bank or whatever you call it. It's actually thanks to you and your fund manager interviews. I think we've discussed it before. So I've just had a little bit of margin free up in the HMS Paulie Pilot yesterday, my spread betting account. So yeah, I opened a new position in Wise. Don't think apart from that, I've been doing anything significant this week. So how about yourself, Paul?
No, I mean, I'm still, as I mentioned last week, I'm still fairly hesitant about what's going to happen in 2 weeks' time when the effectively embargo, that 90-day standstill for the 10% Trump tariffs runs off. And the market is pretty calm at the moment. It seems to be assuming that the likes of America and India, with the EU and Japan, are all going to agree similar trade deals with Donald Trump as the UK has already done. And if that happens, then that's all fine, because we won't get then that carnage we had at the Liberation Day on the 2nd of April. So I just see that as a bit of a sort of like a watershed risk moment, and I'm probably overplaying it because the market isn't batting an eyelid about it. It's just assumed it's Trump taco. And what I don't like about that is that I don't know, obviously, Donald Trump, but he does seem to be quite a belligerent person. And so if he's poked by the press and by the media and ridiculed with the logo or the label taco Trump, I've just got a sneak suspicion he's not going to roll over. He's just going to he's going to dig his heels in. And you've got to be positive. In fact, we are going to get trade deals, but it does mean we've only got a 2 week window to do them or at least go some way. So that's why I've been holding off sort of buying it. But any views on that sort of 8th or 9th of July?
Yeah, I'm ignoring it completely, just on the basis that we can't believe anything he says. He backtracks on nearly everything. And more importantly, though, is the fact that we've now demonstrated from what companies have actually told us over the last, 2-3 months, that tariffs on US imports have little to no impact on any of the shares in my personal investing universe. You know, they've nearly all come out and said manageable, or we had one this morning that just said we passed them on in their entirety. I think that was Velocity Composites, a very small company. They're just passing them on to customers where they have US customers, which very, very few UK small caps actually have to start with. So, you know, I just don't see it really as being relevant now to my investing universe, which has been proven over the last 2 to 3 months.
Yeah, I think you'll start seeing as it goes out longer. My fear is if you'll start to see this sort of like you know, 3 month window going into sort of like them becoming, you know, much longer before we sort it out, you'll start getting indirect effects. And we've seen it through some of the US industrials. We had FedEx coming out at the profit warning, some of the electric implementation businesses, like the electrification implementation, the infrastructure businesses out in the States likewise have been saying it. And the reason is because people yet at the moment do not know where to actually build a factory or put in infrastructure. And on that basis, because there's a lot of UK companies that also supply into that supply chain, then you're going to get indirect effects rather than just your direct, which is what we've only talked about so far.
But very hardly, it doesn't affect hardly any of my shares, Paul. I mean, we had, as an example, with Interseed, IGP, which I hold, have been very keen on in recent years, nearly all their customers are federal government agencies in the US, and they've reported, and the shares sold off by about a third or more in April, and they've fully recovered now and are pretty close to the highs now, because the company's just said, look, this has had no effect on us. It's services, not goods. And I think they said decision making was a bit slower, but it's nearly a large part of its recurring revenues. I honestly think for UK small caps, it makes our what we do relatively more attractive, I feel, because actually they're not subject to these problems that maybe the mid and the large caps in the UK, some of them might be. So, yeah, for me, I just don't, maybe I'm being too complacent, but I'm not invested in anything that sells stuff into America. So it makes our stuff more attractive, I think, Paul.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. I'm just being too cautious, I think. In terms of Interseed, then, that obviously came out with, is it results this week? And how did you read it? I mean, obviously, the share price has done brilliantly over the last, three years since hitting, it was about 40p back in September 2022. So it's obviously had a fantastic run.
Yeah, it has had a fantastic run. It's so well managed as well. I think I met the CEO here when he first joined about, must be 4, 5, 6 years ago now, and he's done exactly what he said he would do in the right order. You know, really unusually strong management for a company of this size. So the latest news on Interseed came on the 24th of June. This was March 25 results. We already knew that the profit would drop as they had a big one-off license in the prior year comparative. So that was well flagged. It was actually comfortably ahead of consensus. And the way Interseed does things, it only gets the broker to up the forecasts when the contracts are in the bag, which I think more small companies need to do. We were talking about this last week with respect to Cordell, weren't we, where we chatted with the CEO and I said, look, just put out base level forecasts would be my suggestion, and then beat them when you win new business. And that's exactly what Interseed does. And it's why the market now trusts the forecasts, because they put out their base case and then they repeatedly upgrade, usually in the second half of the year, as the year goes on. And I think this is a model for all small caps brokers and CEOs to follow. Don't put out hockey stick forecasts that nobody believes, because you won't get any credit for them. And then your shares get slammed when you miss them. You know, much better forecast low, base level, and then beat. That's the way to do it. And that's why Interseed shares are rated on a forward PE of about 30 or 20, high 20s, which looks optically high, but you can be pretty sure they're going to upgrade 2 or 3 times as the year goes on. But that's the established pattern. So I like it very much. Would I be a fresh buyer at the current levels? Probably not. I'm hoping for a bit of a pullback, because I did top slice some of these a little while ago because of the uncertainty. But of course, sod's law, it's shot up. And I'm now floundering, worrying about whether to buy back or not. Director buys, there's been some good director buys yesterday and today, I think. So that's a nice indicator. So yeah, I still like it, but I've fluffed things a bit. I think I took some profit.
I think you've done pretty well. You've been hard on yourself there, Paul. You've done pretty well.
It's been a nice lucrative one for me overall, so I can't complain. But I think long term, this is a really, really good little business. Does cyber security, credential management, client list to die for. I'm struggling to buy more though at the current price.
Well, what sort of weighting is Interseed in your portfolio as a percentage? Above 10% now?
No, it's quite small. It's a relatively modest position.
We've got Rising Bald 1985 asking about Volex, which came out with some strong first half results. And it's really agreed with what you said earlier on. In fact, you know, most people, it does these sort of like high value cables that go into things like electric vehicles, into data centers, into medical devices across the world, been buying it, you know, sites in Turkey and in Mexico, and people were worrying heading into all that, certainly the last 6 months, how tariff was going to affect it. But they seem to have dispelled those concerns.
Yes.
I'm not sure. What was your read on Volex? The shares have done very well.
Marvellous. I mean, when I last looked, it was up, 18%, but I think it might have even, have you got a current price on it?
Yeah, I'll just bring it up. Yeah, it's up 17%.
17%. I mean, it's a fantastic recovery. I mean, really very well done to people who stuck to their guns on this one, because right throughout the spike down at the low point, it was about £2. Yeah, look at that.
Yeah.
Absolutely insane markdown. So I really admire and congratulate people who held through that, because there was no real logic to it. Well, there was fear, because I remember you and I discussing, well, have they got factories in Mexico supplying into the US? And the answer is yes, they're on the border. But things have a funny way of sorting themselves out, don't they? And I mean, we've been solidly green on this. That's my top ranking 5 times this calendar year. And I must admit, it was through gritted teeth during that spike in April. But I reported on the 7th of April, when it was about right at the low, actually. I said, look, it's just announced an ahead of market expectations update. So we basically, we can't give buy, and we don't want to give buy or sell advice, but we pretty much said back up the truck, you know, at around £2. So that one, because it reassured on the tariffs and outlook and said ahead of expectations. So the although it could have been pulled forward demand, which was a point you made at the time, which was a good point, but it seems to now be in rude health. We had an update today, very, very good. It was a beat against expectations. We got a comment about this up at 10 to 8, so people had time to hit the opening bell buy. We put in my Substack, this is a beat against expectations, and we gave the figure. So really well done to, and you had a few minutes to buy them at the open. They only rose about 3%. So there are some fantastic trades at the moment. I know you're not generally a trader, but we try to cater for investors and traders on my Substack, and there are some terrific opportunities right now. And isn't it incredible how sentiment changes?
Yeah, I mean, what you've also got, there's a company which is similar in the States. Yeah. It's called Amphenol, and they make sort of connectors for fiber op. Well, basically for electrics and for sort of data centers and stuff like that, which is similar to this. But I mean, I think theirs is slightly higher value, but not. But it's a similar sort of thing, connectors and cables and stuff.
Right.
They trade at about 35 times PE, and I think their shares have tripled over the last sort of like year. So it just shows you, if you start getting some more US investors interested in the UK, they look at winning stocks in the States and say, is there something in Europe or in the UK which looks similar to this? And if there is, let's buy it. And even after today's rise, Volex still trades at less than 15 times PE compared to something similar, which is 35 times. And Amphenol is about sort of like, I don't know, I think it's about 30, 40 billion. It's a huge business anyway. It's not small.
That's staggering. And that's such a good point, Paul, because we saw this with the pawnbrokers as well, H&T, even with a bid premium of about 30 or 40%, it was still dirt cheap for the US company buying it. And it's what a great way for US companies to bolt on additional growth. And that's the classic thing, isn't it? If you're rated on 30 times and you're buying something on 15 times, it's just an engine for them to keep going with their high valuations. So, absolutely. I mean, we're not going to end up with many companies left at this rate, I fear. But in the meantime, there's rich pickings for UK investors to just fill our boots with. I mean, I've got a portfolio now of over 40 companies, all of which are value and GARP, where I think there's bid potential for probably most of them. I've only caught one takeover bid this year. I'm really, really gutted. I should have got more than one. Have you had any this year, Paul?
I can't remember. No, I haven't either. No, I had one last year. No, I mean, I wouldn't class Argentex as a takeover. I'd take it as a take-under.
No,
I mean, it's a long-term game. It's a marathon. Yeah. Okay, let's move sectors. We've got Nicholas Slater. He's basically saying, I'll summarize this. Why the hell is one times Bitcoin worth 10 times with smarter web company? What's the bull case? Apparently, this is a, I think it's a web, we used to be a web management company that's decided to buy Bitcoin in its treasury. It did a placing, I think this morning, at about 40, raised 41 million quid to buy Bitcoin. And the shares currently are, I think they're worth roughly around about 650 million pounds, even though it's only got assets of about 100.
It's a complete joke. I mean, this is, I've been on about this in my podcast this week. Absolute ridiculous, ramptastic frenzy. I did a news filter on ShareScope yesterday to look for the words Bitcoin treasury. That's the tell. And when I named and shamed all of the companies that had RNS'd a Bitcoin treasury strategy in recent weeks, and they're doing this up and straight back down again. It's all just a gigantic ramp, utter rubbish. And basically, of course, they're going to get spike up and come straight back down again, because all the insiders and the promoters and the rampers are going to be banking their profits, aren't they? So I just want to, you know, my loyalty is towards the ordinary investors who pay for our for my Substack, modest subscription. It's only £10 a month, if you don't mind plugging it briefly, Paul. And, you know, my loyalty is to them, whereas the whole of the apparatus of the city is to ramp things in either a brazen or a subtle way. They're getting paid by the companies to talk up the shares. So you hear the truth from guys like us who'll tell you that these things, there's no substance to it whatsoever, and it's the most brazen ramp. It reminds me of 1999 all over again, where you had anything to do with the internet just announce an internet type strategy and they tembagged. You know, it's that type of frenzy. So I'm not really holding back here, Paul. So
it just seems absolutely bonkers to me, because I mean, I can't even get, I mean, I think it's trades on Aquis, doesn't it? And
I can't
even get a stock ticker on a stock chart on it. It used to be so small, but I've got, I mean, the share price, according to Yahoo, used to be about 5p only about sort of like a month ago, and then now 270.
It's crazy. I mean, look, if these guys can get a fundraiser away, good luck to them. Good luck to them. And of course, who's putting money into these type of things? Mm-hmm. I would suggest people with a very short time frame, get rich quick merchants, you know, and if they time themselves at the right level, they might do well. The main, you know, and you can, you know, if people can make money out of this type of thing, good luck to them. But it's very much caveat emptor, and I don't want to see my subscribers getting sucked into these brazen ramps and losing their shirt, you know, because I've seen it all before. We had this in 1999. By 2000, these sorts of things were in the 90% drop club. A year later, they were in the 99% drop club. You know, it's just a complete rerun. If there's no fundamental value in terms of assets or earnings, then it's just a ramp. And the trouble is, the assets are Bitcoin, which in itself is a huge ramp. Do you see what I mean?
So I do, No, it's absolutely.
Probably, Gavin, it's not for me, Paul.
No, it's not. And I think it's probably answered Nicholas's question pretty pretty well. Okay, let's move. Sector's got the healthcare. We've got one health group that we don't normally talk about. It's basically, it's like a company that helps the NHS do elective procedures in sort of knees and hips, orthopedics and spine operations. I think it does. It's got a sort of like a stable of a whole bunch of consultants, largely outside the southeast, that do procedures and help, as I say, help NHS Trust get down the waiting list and stuff like that. I think that currently they use both. I think they use private facilities, but they're actually building their own. I don't know if you only had a look at this one. Came out with, I think, was it a trading update just recently? The shares did very well, actually.
Yeah, I can't remember the ticker. It's a four-letter ticker. I'm not
really good at it. OHGR.
Yeah, now this one I actually put on our agenda because I really wanted your views on it, because I've researched it briefly. It's a recent float, moved from Aquis actually to AIM. I researched it in April and thought, well, this looks quite interesting. Then the maiden results were out 23rd of June. That's quite recent, isn't it? I thought they looked quite interesting. It's profitable. It's got 10 million cash. So the enterprise value is only 15 million. So I was wondering what you think about it, Paul, because I think it looks quite interesting. Oh, and I should, for full disclosure, say I've dipped my toe in with a starter position personally.
Yeah. No, I mean, I like it. I think there's a good concept in terms of there's going to be demand. The one thing I would say is I think it's just, it is one, I mean, I know they operate with about, I think it's 60 different NHS trusts or bodies across the UK. But essentially, it's all the same customer. It's all the NHS. And on that basis, it does mean it's sort of like quite beholden to government policy in terms of pricing and future negotiations. So it probably needs to diversify that. Once it's got its own facilities up operation, it'll be able to, you know, address the sort of customer concentration issue. And it gives them, I mean, clearly, you know, we need more capacity to be able to do, you know, sort of more procedures and stuff. So yeah, it's good. I mean, there's a guy called Andy 225. He's asking me about Spire Healthcare.
And oh, yes.
As I say, I like this sector, but I would go to Spire because it has more, it's bigger, it has more resilience. And it came out with a profit warning about, 6 months ago. And it was largely because it was struggling to pass on the NI to into its NHS procedures, you know, the NI increase, and therefore.
Oh, that's right. I remember us discussing that at the time. Yes.
Yeah. And what they seem to, the shares have actually, I'm just going to put the chart up. The shares have started to increase. And I think what's happened, I've seen a number of news wires in the press saying they're actually taking out quite a bit of headcounts and getting those efficiency savings that they planned. And I think that's what the market is reading at the moment, because the shares have recovered pretty well. I'll just put the chart on. I mean, you know, that was the profit warning when we discussed it at about 175 where I bought in, and now they're about 220. And that's just tracking what the news, you know, if you did a Google search on it, etc., they're all saying that they're actually taking out cost. And if that's the case, then there'll be a leaner, fitter organisation with a lower cost base and be able to serve not only the insurers, but also the self-pay, the corporate customers and the NHS. And I think the NHS accounts for about a third of the revenue. So it's not the biggest part, whereas with one health group, it does seem to be still the biggest. And of course, if you only have one facility, when they build this new one, this new surgery, their surgical hub, one health group, then if you have any problem with that, if it has to close, then you've got even, you know, got a big issue as well. So it just, I like the sector. I just think if I was going to choose, I'd go for something a bit bigger and a bit more resilient.
Well, I'm going, first off, congratulations on that. It was a fantastic call. I mean, wouldn't it be lovely if all profit warnings resulted in charts like that? God. But just to play devil's advocate, Paul, I take on board all your points, all perfectly valid. I would point out that One Health Group has a significantly higher operating profit margin than Spire Health.
Yes.
So doesn't that suggest, I mean, if it can make a higher margin when it's really small, that says to me that maybe they've got a better business model, which could scale up very nicely. I haven't met the management, but apparently they're very good at One Health. It's a retired surgeon or semi-retired surgeon who owner-managed. He owns 40%. Apparently he came across very well on a recent webinar, so I'm going to try and track that down and have a look at it. And I like the fact that this could tembag, whereas Spire Healthcare, very unlikely to tembag. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I do. No, absolutely. It's got far more upside. I'll just check your operating profit margins, because I have One Health Group going forward at 7.3%. And then I have Spire at 10% going forward.
I think it depends how it's calculated, doesn't it?
Because that's maybe EBIT. That's EBIT.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of adjustments with.
Okay. Mine's underlying. Yeah, no, I give you that.
Yeah, I take your point, though. I'll double check that thing on the margins. But I think the fact that One Health Group can deliver, I think it was around 2 to 3 million profit, proper profit, on about 28 million revenue. If you've got, you know, if you've got an 8 or 9 or 10% PBT margin when you're that small, that says to me this could really scale up nicely.
Yeah, no, it could do. But I think they need their own facility. That's what they need. Mm. They need more of their own, because then they can improve the ROI.
Yeah, I mean, that's under construction, I believe, isn't it? At the moment. And they got the cat. This was a lovely example of a company floating on AIM. I know it was a transfer from Aquis, but they raised money for expansion capital. And that's what you want, isn't it? Rather than insiders stuffing all the institutional fund managers with overpriced shares to provide an exit for them. I want to see smaller companies floating on AIM and raising expansion capex. I think this looks promising, and the maiden results were good for One Health Group. So it's on my radar as something to possibly add to on the dips, maybe.
Yeah, no, good idea. Definitely worth having a good look at. Another company that's come out with a profit warning, in fact, a couple of them, unfortunately. Is it a turnaround or is it a value trap? We'll find out what your views are. It's Next 15. Basically, it's a marketing consultancy business that it bought a company called Mac49, I think, about 3 years ago, paid pretty much top dollar for it, and then it lost an £80 million contract 12 months ago. It was to do in Saudi Arabia. It was to do the effectively consultancy for that big wall project, which they've been doing, in the desert. And now they came out with another trading update or a statement this week. In fact, yesterday, saying there was potential, irregular behavior by some of its senior staff in that local Mac49 subsidiary, which then dismissed those three people, etc. The shares are absolutely being hammered, absolutely hammered. I don't know what your initial thoughts on that are. They're down another 25% today.
What's the ticker again, Paul?
NFC.
NFC, is it? Next 15. Yeah, that's not coming up with anything. Is it NFG?
It could be NFG.
You've caught me slightly on the hop, because I my colleague John looked at this morning, and he's put up a comment here. Yeah, down 23% at the time of writing. It's gone down a bit more, hasn't it? I need to look into this brand damage business from that revelation yesterday, because that sounds serious, doesn't it? Yeah. Also, it said it's spending more on AI and spending more on staff, and it's had an adverse dollar impact because 50% of revenues are US dollars. That was in this morning's update, which was another profit warning, as you say, materially below expectations. We don't like the balance sheet on this one. This is the trouble. Again, it's got the debt is only 0.3 times EBITDA, but there's also deferred consideration creditors to add on to that. So it's negative 89 million net tangible asset value. So that's pretty weak in January, that was. So this looks a real can of worms, doesn't it? I think for the time being, I'm not tempted to bottom fish this. We've been kind of sounding a note of caution on it for a while now. Are you tempted, Paul?
No, I'm not. It just isn't in the sector. I mean, you know, marketing consultancy, business transformation, and we heard actually from Accenture last week and their results, and they're finding it really tough to get sort of decisions from their clients to progress projects. They've just put them on hold, and that comes back to the original. You know, when we had a commentary in terms of you will start be getting indirect impacts onto companies through the supply chain, where businesses want to do projects, but currently put them on hold because there's too much uncertainty. Then businesses like this, which are the picks and shovels to be able to implement them, or Accenture or any other type of media business, then unfortunately it makes a huge difference because you've got a big consultant base, a fixed cost base.
Yeah.
You lose a hell of a lot of contracts, and therefore it just drops straight through to the bottom line. So yeah, I'm with you. It's if I knew where what the E was going to be, and I was confident of that, but I'm not, frankly.
No, I'm the same. I just think it's I don't want to take any hits on things unnecessarily. I do have a personal position in Saatchi.
Okay.
I think that has not a big one, just a smallish one that's in profit. I think that seems much more resilient it's Vin Maria likes that one a lot, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does.
Know her stuff. So, but apart from that, I can't think of any other marketing type companies in my portfolio. And you've got to be terribly careful, haven't you, when they start disappointing? Are you just getting sucked into a value trap where your PE of 6 or 5 or even 4 looks attractive, but then it turns out there's all sorts of other stuff coming out the woodwork? So yeah, it doesn't appeal to either of us really, does it?
No, it's too much uncertainty, too many clients. Yeah. There's better opportunities at the moment. Less risk, maybe less upside, but certainly less risk.
I agree.
Paul the Parrot is congratulating you, Paul. He's saying, obviously, you've recently visited a local Turkish barber because you're looking very sharp. Very sharp.
Actually, it's Kurdish where the one I go.
Okay, Kurdish, crikey, even cheaper. Did you pay in Bitcoin there?
No, okay. It's great though, Paul. Seriously, it's great because they hardly speak any English. So you don't have to make small talk. You just sit there and let them get on with the job. Yeah. Rest your eyes and you wake up and it's all done.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of Turkish barbers around me and I think the police are after them most of the time. Okay. We've got a follow-up from Paul the Parrot. He's basically asking about Avingtrans, which I know a bit about. Basically, it's an industrial company that's got a big engineering business, and it came out with a year-end trading update this week. And it's benefiting. It's got two parts of its business. It's got aftermarket and it's got OE equipment. It's about 50-50 or 55 OE and 45 aftermarket. The three big structural tailwinds it's enjoying are in nuclear, defense, and data centers. It makes HVAC systems for defense. It makes really sort of sophisticated high-level pumps for nuclear and for lots of other really difficult, you know, things, and things like blast-proof doors for, and I believe for things like submarines and for HS2 and these high-integrity storage boxes. Anyway, it's got a big order book. Its engineering business is doing very well. And it's got a fledgling medical business. And Singers came out with their note. They've upgraded their price target from 525 to 570, I think. 580. And that's just valuing the engineering business. And they reckon the med healthcare is worth another two quid on some of the parts. I don't know if you have any thoughts on it at all.
Only very slight thoughts. This, again, as you say, we've made in our notes that this is one of the Harwood, some of the parts ones. Now, because I have to cover, I've covered 700, well, me and the team, rather, I should say, have covered pretty much the entire market. We do about 700 companies now, which is nearly the whole market minus the sub 10 million ones. We can't go into a lot of depth. So I don't really have anything to add on this other than that the trading update was for this week for the May year end, and it was in line with recently upgraded expectations, so that's good. And the outlook, it said just a generic sort of, we see the outlook for the following year with confidence. There wasn't really any clear guidance. It's got a decent balance sheet with very modest net debt. All we can do is just do a desktop valuation on it. It was kind of PE of 23, 24 or something. So to my mind, you know, I wouldn't really be interested in doing any further research unless I had a cheaper starting point. So for me, you know, good luck to everyone with it, but I haven't really got the time or particularly the inclination to dig into this one that much more at the current price. But does sound interesting.
It is. You need to value on a sum of the parts basis, and but these type of engineering businesses tend to go for 12 to 13 times EBITDA. And then you'll have the medical can be anything. It all depends on how successful it is. It's got sort of like approvals with the FDA. What it needs is starting to commercialize that small form MRI and X-ray technology. But it's definitely something that, as you say, the Harwood boys like.
Yeah, and the other, just the final point to add on that one is that Avingtrans has a history of buying, turning around and selling businesses, doesn't it? It's really almost like a company doctor. Yeah. And it has, management seem to have a very good track record of doing that. So do you think in this case then they're going to run with their current companies, or are they aiming to sell them on and then buy something else? Do you know what
It's a really good question. The business model would say they're going to exit, okay, because it's their pie strategy, pinpoint, invest, exit after a bit of a private equity type 5-year, 6-year sort of lifespan on a particular company, turn it around and sell it. However, Personally, I would quite like them to keep it and buy and build, because I think this is a fantastic portfolio of engineering business that you do see synergies on the technology and on sort of contracts with particular customers. And the one thing I would say, though, if they do get a hit with their medical business, which is starting now to get sort of real traction and you know, with customers, if that becomes a hit, then I would expect them to spin it off and sell it to a bigger MRI or X-ray company that could actually then take it and scale it properly. But no, I think that engineering business is absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, because it's a bit too small. I mean, 149 million market cap. It's in that sort of no man's land, isn't it? Where it's not quite big enough to really get much institutional interest. I think to my mind, it would make sense, wouldn't it, for them to just buy and build, because they don't have a problem with debt. There's only 12 million debt. It's 0.8 times EBITDA. So, and the equity is rated highly on a forward PE basis. So to me, that's an ideal situation to go out to the institutions and say, we want to raise £60 million or whatever. That's just plugging a figure from the air, get a bigger bank facility and then do a big acquisition and really scale this thing up. And then once you're at the 250 million plus market caps, it's a different ball game altogether, isn't it? Because I think these shares are very, Avingtrans shares, I think, very illiquid as well. I think it's one of those things. It's a bit too small, and it's got sticky long-term shareholders, which is it's not the ideal setup, really, is it?
The people who, when you buy it, you don't sell it. It's one of those, they hold on for ages. It's the quality.
It's a bit like Goodwin. That's another engineering.
Yeah, exactly.
Very similar. Yeah.
Okay, good. Let's switch sectors. We've got Ben Sharman. He's asking about Cavendish, which is a small cap sort of like broker stroke investment house in the UK. Weird. Most people are familiar with it, seeing its research is available on a lot of small caps. Came out with some quite reassuring or promising statements. I think it was today or yesterday, just talking about how it sees the IPO market moving and sort of activities, etc. How did you read it? The shares actually have done really well. They're 50% up over the last 6 weeks.
I know. We flagged this at 8.5p on the 4th of April. We gave it a green and just said market cap is 75% backed by net cash on that date. So we did flag it. So I hope people grabbed a few. Actually, I think Nick, who was on before asking you a question, I think he bought a few of these because I remember us talking about it. I don't know if he bought them or not, but we were discussing it. I think it looks very good. The results today, I think it was, my colleague John looked at them, were good. It made a small loss last year. It's actually reported a profit, which in the current macro, you know, current market for an investment, a small investment bank, I think is a very good result. How, with one big caveat, which actually we forgot to put in today's report, but I remembered it after we published it, is that if you look at the statutory PBT, nearly all of it is nearly all of the adjusted profit of 3.7 million. Nearly all of it goes in share options costs.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Now, that doesn't surprise me.
It doesn't surprise me at all. But it does. But I think, you know, okay, look, these type of firms are run entirely for the benefit of their own management and staff. Let's just be blunt about it. But having said that, it's still performing, I think, very well in the circumstances. Mm. So once you layer on a cyclical recovery and hopefully, fingers crossed, a decent, you know, recovery in IPO markets as well, there could be good cyclical upside on this, couldn't there? So, but I think I've missed the boat. I didn't buy them at 8.5p. I don't really want to pay 13p now, just a few weeks later. Yeah. Do you ever buy brokers, Paul?
No, I don't, for the same sort of reasons that in terms of services companies, and it tends to be concentrated on a few sort of key rainmakers who generate most of the revenue. However, having said that, I would say that, yes, they might well have sort of backed the truck up on share options at the low. Now you've probably got some pretty keen sort of like rainmakers and deal makers
in
Cavendish
point.
Who really want this business to fly and do well. So if you buy now, then, or, you know, at this sort of time, you've got a lot of people who absolutely want this business to do well over the next 3 or 4 years. And if we do get a cyclical upturn, we start seeing, as you said, we need to have more companies, good quality businesses coming through the IPO hopper. Then these ones are the best place, because they do actually have a pretty good reputation, Cavendish, in terms of their research. I think so anyway.
Well, I mean, I'm certainly not going to say anything negative about the research. I mean, I don't know what we'd do without them, because they are, I think, pretty much by far the largest broker to UK small caps. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm very, very grateful to Cavendish for putting all, I mean, obviously it's in their and their clients' interest to put the research out to private investors, but even so, they don't have to, and it's incredibly helpful. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised to see Cavendish shares up to 20-25p if we do get a sustained recovery in UK small caps and the IPO market recovers. And in the meantime, even after the big rise we've had in the shares, it's still 50% backed by net cash. Yeah. Surplus net cash is very well capitalized. It was the merger of Cenkos and FinCap, wasn't it?
That's right.
And they've taken quite a bit of duplicated costs out. I think it's a nice business. They also, Sky News reported a couple of days ago that they'd been approached by something,
Smith and Williamson. Yeah,
okay. Williamson apparently had approached them to buy their private M&A and debt advisory part of the business, but we weren't given a price. But Cavendish rejected that and said, no, we want to remain a full service broker. So I think that's quite good. At least, you know, if someone else is sniffing around.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Business,
that's a bullish thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, they should know a thing or two about M&A, shouldn't they? If they don't, then they've got a problem.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move back to the healthcare sector. One, or life sciences. One you sort of mentioned worth having a chat was Tissue Regenics, which we hardly ever talk about. It basically helps, I think, sort of patients recover from, damage from injuries. And it basically does these cells that they strip out all the DNA that then you're allowed to put sort of healing material inside, and then it'll start healing teeth and bone. Theory is TRX. It's been going for some time, no doubt about it. But they do got about, I can't remember the last time I looked at it, I think they've got quite a reasonable turnover. And they are coming
28 million something.
Yeah, $30 million I've got, and then they're just starting to break even as well. Anyway, what was your sort of like, you know, synopsis of it?
Well, this one I looked at and I thought, oh, I better ask Paul about it, because we don't confer before doing these videos. So we sort of spring ideas on each other, really. I thought, well, actually, I want to hear from you what you think about it, because my take on it was that I think this looks potentially interesting. Results for December 24 have just come out. So I was looking at this yesterday, but as always, you know, I had to abandon it, ran out of time. You're right. It's almost got to break even now after years of heavy losses. Only a $0.6 million loss for calendar 24. And that's the loss before tax, not EBITDA numbers. And there's no clear outlook or guidance. They've done a strategic review in the last year, basically put themselves up for sale, but there were no takers. And they do say, I read back a few of the old RNSs, they're really frustrated with the stock market for attributing such a tiny market cap to it, 22 million. Well, I'm sure lots of companies think they're worth
it. I was going to say, join the club.
Yeah, quite. But again, this is another one where Harwood are involved. The only drawback I can find, so there's some other big name shareholders as well. I think you've got Richard Griffiths is in this, who again, he's the billionaire and I'm not. So I look at what he does, you know. The strategic review failed. They couldn't get any interest for the company or the products at a level that they want. So this could be a real case where actually having a listing in a 22 million market cap is really detrimental to the business and them doing deals. So I'm quite interested in this as a potential sort of more speculative possible purchase for myself. I haven't as yet. I wanted to ask you about it. And the big drawback is the inventories are ridiculously high. Something's gone wrong with inventories, and they got too much debt.
Yes.
So that's as far as I got with it. So over to you, Paul.
I would say, you know, given they're only just turning to profitability, I would say the debt is too high and they'll probably need to raise some more money.
Yeah.
It has been around for a long time. It's a lovely bit of science, but I don't know enough about how the USPs of the technology, how much better it is compared to other healing and regenerative type of technologies for things like bone and cartilage and teeth and stuff like this. And I think that's really what you need to do if you want to sort of invest in what is actually the, you know, the science, how good it is. But having said that, the sales were up. I think it was high single digits, which always suggests, which is not, you know, things are moving forward on both divisions. So yeah, they might well have sort of cracked it. And on that basis, that if they have, and they've got some lots of recurring revenue streams coming on, then you're right. I mean, this will be worth a lot more because it's only trading at 1.2 times sales, which frankly, for a high value sort of med tech type business, life sciences business, is very, very cheap.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
But I do think they probably, I mean, I'm just guessing here, they probably need to raise 10 million bucks. And given their market cap's only 30 million, it's quite a, that's quite a lot of dilution.
Yeah, it's less than that, actually. I've got 22 million market cap.
Yeah, I mean, that's dollars, though.
Oh,
I said 30. Yeah, it was 30 million dollars. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, right. Yeah. So, yeah, it's in that sort of chicken and egg place, isn't it, really, where it needs money, but the valuation's too low. It is interesting, though, I think. It's just got that smell. You know, when you don't necessarily know the detail, but you can just smell that there might be something interesting there. Yeah. So I'd be interested to hear any comments from any of the viewers, actually, who've looked at Tissue Regenics. Pop some comments in the questions box. Yeah, or, you know, on the recording. Yeah. So I'm intrigued by that one. I might have a little dabble on it. I haven't decided yet. So is it one you would buy? Put yourself, Paul?
It's too small. It isn't. I haven't got enough liquidity either. I'd struggle to get like 50 grand's worth, you know. So yeah, it wouldn't be something.
Well, you'd probably be able to pick them up instantly. The problem would be when you want to sell them.
Well, I probably wouldn't get ahead. Also, I probably wouldn't get ahead of a fundraise, which I think they're going to need. I mean, I'm just that's total speculation, but it looks to me it needs another fundraise. Yeah. And that's probably one of the reasons why they decided to look to a strategic review because, you know, because they'd sort the balance sheet out. Okay. Yeah. Well, you've raised me the Tissue Regenics. Well, I'll double down and go with RM Group, which basically is an education ed tech type of business that, again, Richard Stavely and the Harwood boys are all over. It has three divisions. And the reason why the big issue at the moment is that it's got its debt, which is actually, which sent the shares down just recently. And it needs to deleverage. And I think the net debt is about 60 million pounds, which on a very low EBITDA, is pretty extreme, so they need to definitely get that down. But they have three divisions. Their crown jewel division is their software assessment business that they help basically things like examinating bodies like IB, the International Baccalaureate, and also Cambridge. You know, the Cambridge guys out in the UK to do A levels and stuff, to help them assess on digital basically. People who actually do those exams. That's a fantastic business that's doing double-digit growth, high margins. Contribution margins are well over 30%, about 33%, it's only for about 25% of its own turnover. However, if you work the numbers out and you do sort of like a straight sort of 3x sales on this high-value, fast-growing software company, which is division, which is not exactly extreme, you get to roughly around about 120 million pounds, and the enterprise value including the debt, you get to 130 million pounds. So essentially the assessment business is worth what the whole business on an enterprise basis is worth, and therefore you get 75% of the revenues in the other two divisions for free. And that's other 75%, which is about 110-120 million of revenue. It's not that high quality business. It's things like helping teachers and selling and doing digital technology in schools, which obviously we've got budget constraints. I don't know whether you've ever had a look at this as an unbundling play, which is clearly what the Harwood guys and Richard Stavely is attracted to.
Yeah, I have. I've not looked at it in huge detail recently, but I was a bit underwhelmed by the recent trading update, the H1 update, as you say, mainly because I think some of these fund managers, when they talk about a lot of them seem to like turnarounds and unbundling, as you say, but I sometimes get the feeling they're underestimating how difficult it is to actually achieve that. You know, they often
Good point.
Yeah, they seem quite blasé about, oh, you know, they're going to get the operating margin up from 5% to 10%. Well, it's incredibly difficult to actually execute to do that, because there's a reason.
Remember these guys actually go on the board as well, which is slightly different. I mean, these guys, you know, run the sleeve up, don't they, to basically...
But that doesn't guarantee success, does it? I mean, I just feel the debt is well beyond a point where I could live with it personally. As you know, I'm very, very conservative on balance sheets. So I think the latest net debt of, as you said, 60 million, 4x EBITDA, which is well into danger territory. So, I mean, it's not going to pull the company down, but it could mean... significant dilution, couldn't it? And I don't like, as you said before, I just don't like being in situations where they need to raise equity, because you've got no idea what the terms could be. They could absolutely massacre the small shareholders. So it's not for me at the moment, although it did say it was making progress on profitability. RM assessment is strong. That's the jewel in the crown, as you mentioned, isn't it? The bank have extended the facilities to July 27. So the going concern thing should be all right for the time being, but it is totally dependent on the bank, which I don't like. Pension fund has turned from a deficit to a surplus, they're saying. That sounds good, but it depends whether it's actuarial or accounting surplus, of course. And it is saying in line to meet expectations for the current financial year. So it's not, you know, it's not all bad by any means. There's good and bad elements to this one, but it doesn't jump out at me as being... enough of a bargain for me to want to get involved.
Yeah, no, you raised really good points. You know, there's lots of things you want to do in terms of unbundling and margins, and you're right, there's a lot of... It isn't as easy as you think it is. You have to sort of, like, you know, you wait and prepare the business and all that kind of stuff. The upside, if you wanted to have a bull... I don't own the shares, okay? But if you want to have a bull thesis on it, yeah, you would say, okay, the 75% of the business that, frankly, you probably don't want long term.
Yeah.
Then you bundle it, you strip out all the PLC costs, and you'll be able to do sort of like 8 to 9 to 10% EBIT margins on this, because they both do on a contribution level anywhere between 10 to 15 already. So if you sold it to private equity, 120 million, you know, sales business. Let's just say, for instance, you only sold it for 60 million. I think you could sell it for 100 million, but let's just say you only 60. You'd wipe the debt off from day one. Then you'd basically have your software business that people would look as a pure play assessment business without any debt, growing at sort of teens, you know, teens growth. And then people would look at it and say, well, okay, is there much difference between a Pinewood Technologies and an assessment? And then, you know, you start getting a huge re-rating, because I think the recurring revenue in that assessment software business is about 95%.
That is impressive. Yeah,
you can understand why everybody's jumping up and down about the assessment business, but it's been hidden underneath this debt pile, which you rightly point out, and also been hidden by quite some heavy central costs that they need to get rid of, which they'd be able to shed if they sold the other 120 million pound in the business. But anyway, that's the thesis.
I think it's a really good thesis, actually, because, as you say, the Pinewood situation with Pendragon just showed, didn't it? Really, that's spectacular success, that unbundling, that if you have a really, really good business with great potential and recurring revenues buried in a group of fairly humdrum, low PE type businesses, the value can be immense, can't it? Although, look at I would remember Tribal, we've mentioned a few times.
Yes, I own
that
Tribal.
It's a recurring revenue software business, and it's on a PE of about 7 or something. So it doesn't always work, does it? And also, I think with RM, they did flag, I think part of the reason that the share price has sort of done that was, I think they flagged budgetary constraints, didn't they, and contract deferrals and things. I think their education software, I wouldn't personally want to particularly go for that because of those budgetary, even if the customer wants the product, they can't afford it very often.
Yeah. If you only got 60 million for that 120 million pound business, you better wipe your debt off. But you've raised really good... the points that you've raised, particularly the debt, and it's not always easy to get what you want, are the reasons why I don't own it. But I can absolutely see how good and high quality that assessment business is.
It's like with all shares, it's all nuanced, isn't it? It's not, an entirely bull case or an entirely bear case. it's the whole lot in a package, and then you have to weigh up whether the package sort of floats your boat, don't you?
Yeah, no, you're right. Okay. Now, just cast your mind back about 3 weeks ago, and I can't remember, some very astute guy in the audience. He said, there's this company, and the shares have been going down. It's called Ultimate Products. It's about 80, 90p. What? And then we chatted about it and said, crikey, that's a really good spot. That's a spot of the week. And now the shares have cratered over this last week on a profit warning, which says to me that, you know, the market started sniffing this one out earlier than most investors did. What's your latest on Ultimate Products? It basically does things like scales, domestic scales. It owns, I can't remember, there's Salt. Well-known Salter, and there's another one it owns.
Beldray, is it?
About, exactly. So it's got some good products, but it came out with a bit of a shocker, I think, this week.
It did. This is a pity because, you know, in the past, this company's, I think the management are decent. I remember talking to their MD right at the height of the pandemic, and I did a podcast with him, and it's still out there, I think, somewhere on the internet. And he gave a masterclass in, you know, how to import goods from China and all the hoops you have to jump through and everything. They just basically make small electrical and household appliances made in China, and they bring them into the UK and they sell them on through various channels, wholesale, through Amazon and so on. And it looked quite a promising business, didn't it? But yeah, unfortunately, they've had two profit warnings now this year, one in February and the one this week. Again, my colleague John did a section on this for my Substack on the day, and the cuts to the forecasts are really quite severe. It's an unusual year end, isn't it? July, that was it. The July 26 forecast cut was 50%. I mean, that is down to only 5p earnings per share, which, you know, it's not the best quality business. It's profit warned now quite a few times, because we had a similar setback not long after it floated a few years ago. Same sort of thing happened. So you're not going to put it on a PE of more than 10, which means 50p is probably a fair price. And that's pretty much bang on where it is now. So I think the mistake investors can make with this type of share is locking onto the previous price and thinking, well, I paid 90p for it and I thought it was cheap at that. And then they see, oh, blimey, it's off 40% or 30%. Yeah. It's an overreaction. I'll double up or I'll triple up. And then as the dust settles over the next few days, you realize that actually the fall was fully justified. So even though I like the company and I like the management, I just have to say, unfortunately, I think 50p is about the right price now for it. Also, the debt now will have gone up from 1x EBITDA to 2x EBITDA.
Yes.
And they were doing a buyback, which they're probably now regretting and may have to stop the buyback. So, yeah, unfortunately, but it is owner managed. I think the management will turn it round probably. This could be the new normal, because last year they were making out like bandits on the air fryers.
Yes.
So maybe that was a boom period on your chart there in 2023 and 24. Maybe the current level is the new normal. I don't. This is what we don't know. It's either, John covered both good and bad on my Substack, and he said it's either cheap and they're setting it up now to start beating against expectations, or it's priced about right and this is the new normal. Or it warns on profit again. This had to go in our don't know trade, Paul. I think you've been reasonably positive in the past on it, haven't you?
The summary that when we 3 weeks ago, I said the one thing I would be concerned about is the Chinese competition, is because they now don't have access to the States because they've stopped that low value sort of like. And they're redirecting all of that excess, spares and stock into Europe. And I just get the sneaks. They're just basically the Chinese guys and the Asia Pac are just selling them at distressed levels into the UK and Europe. And unfortunately, it's very. I know these guys probably buy from China, but when you're competing against somebody who has gotten very little consideration for profit and just wants to employ people, it's not a great look, to be perfectly honest. And I think that's what's been happening with some of the sales.
But couldn't they act as the? I mean, they're very good at acting as the intermediary, though, aren't they? So couldn't they benefit from that? Don't you think? By buying cheap from the Chinese factories?
Only if you can actually justify your value as an intermediary. And I'm not 100%. I mean, I don't know. When I look at online, I'll go straight into eBay or whatever like that. And, you know, I'm quite just, all I do is just go, what's the cheapest, you know, sort of price, sort of post, fully posted into the UK. And as long as you've got a decent tick, you know, number of, you know, positives on there on as a recommendation, then that's it, it's fine, you know.
Yeah, I quite like the way Ultimate Products, though, do buy well-known but kind of semi-defunct brand names. Because they can then, so it's like Salter, you know, we all know that name, don't we, those of us over, over 40 or whatever. So if you saw a Salter set of bathroom scales next to a Tesco's own brand, you'd probably pay £3 or £4 more for the Salter ones, wouldn't you?
No, I wouldn't. No. I would go Tesco's. I'm sorry.
Get.
I know. No, I would. I would just basically just buy one. I mean, I just don't do much US. But anyway, that's me. Okay, let's move to another sector. We talk about fund managers a lot, and one of them cut its dividend, halved it. In fact, is Lion Trust this week, and is that really sort of like that may sort of act as the watershed for the rest of the sector to resize their dividend payouts? I don't know what your thoughts were on Lion Trust. The shares actually were pretty static because they're obviously they're sort of like got this, investors are thinking that because we might be having a turn now in UK equities, these guys could well do well. But what's your thoughts on Lion Trust?
Well, we've been negative on it 3 times this year from January, Amber Red, warning people specifically that Lion Trust's issues are, I think, very specific to the company in that it had a boom in, what was it, sort of ESG and environmental type investment funds.
Yes.
Well, those funds make up quite a high percentage of its funds, and they've done really, really badly. They publish a table with their results showing how they're nearly all fourth quartile. So, of course, what happens? The clients take their money out. So they've had really massive outflows from the clients. I mean, just to give you the numbers, you've probably seen them. This was March 2025 results. Assets under management and administration dropped from 27.8 billion to 22.6 billion. So that's a huge drop in 1 year. What's that? Nearly 25% drop in assets under management in just in 1 year. Earnings have dropped considerably as well. They are cutting costs. You're quite right. The dividend was cut, but I mean, people would have known that was coming because the yield was something crazy, wasn't it? Like 17 or 18%. When you see a yield at that level, you know it's not sustainable, but they've rebased it now, I think, 50% of future earnings. So the balance sheet's pretty good, but of course, you know, if you keep paying out bigger dividends than earnings, you're depleting your balance sheet. I think this is a real problem, Lion Trust. I wouldn't personally touch it unless they can demonstrate that they're starting to attract client funds inflows. And, you know, maybe their investments will start surging and that might happen. So I wouldn't rule it out completely, but it needs that trigger of fund outflows actually stopping and reversing. Otherwise, you've just got a slowly dying business. I wouldn't want to own shares in that. I think each fund manager is different. Some of the smaller, nimbler ones, I think, are better placed. So I've been bullish on Premier Miton, Gervais's outfit, because they could just launch a new fund, you know, and on some latest topsy-turvy investing theme. And maybe he could do Bitcoin and AI.
That would do very well.
And because that would be potentially material to Miton's overall funds under management, I can see that that's more nimble. It could turn more quickly. What I don't want is a lumbering giant with a whole bunch of underperforming shares and funds. And that's where I see Lion Trust. Happy to change my mind if the facts change. And the one I picked really has the best of all worlds was Aberdeen. Yes.
Yeah, I like that one. I think that's the best one.
It's well below net tangible asset value. It's done quite well. It's risen 20-30%. Everything has, but I don't want things that rise 20-30% with the tide, and then bang, you give it all up in one day when the results come out, which is what happened with the Lion Trust, isn't it? So we've got to pick our spots carefully. When everything's rallying, you know, you can't get carried away and think you're a genius stock picker, because you know a lot of them will drift back down again.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Okay, we've got David Raywood. He's asking about Marks Electrical, which does sort of like everyday sort of electrical product competes against Currys and AO World. And he says that actually Frasers have just increased their shareholding again.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know if you had a look at this. It's a tough sector, but obviously Currys have done well. I think they've actually been hit a bit by Currys, and they're sort of like, I think they're when I read it, I think Marks Electrical are migrating more up into the sort of the premium type of products that go into the sort of kitchen and stuff like that. Anyway, I don't know whether you had a quick look at it.
Yeah, we looked at this one. That was 25th. That was yesterday, wasn't it? March 25 results. I was seriously unimpressed with these. I mean, they were in line with expectations. But, you know, you're up, as you said, they're up against a resurgent Currys and AO World.
Yeah.
And I think these guys, yes, they're small and nimble and they've got a lean operating model. I mean, the webinars with the founder are absolutely brilliant. But I think this, again, it hasn't lived up to expectations. You know, the profits each year drop when they're meant to be going up. So balance sheet's all right. Move to higher margin products, you're right. It's too expensive. I mean, it's on a PE of about 30 times. Mm. I cannot see any justification for that. 60p the shares are. I think I wouldn't even think about buying them unless they were 30 pence or less.
Yeah.
It doesn't stack up, the valuation, unless you think it's going to have a strong turnaround, in which case, yes, I could see why people would like it. But I can only base my view on the facts, figures and forecasts as of today. And it still looks overpriced to me. Yeah.
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 Unless the owner and the founder decides to sell up to Mike Ashley, albeit he doesn't usually pay.
Yeah, that's an interesting angle. I can't see that he would. And I have a feeling the founder here, does he have about 75% or something?
Yes, he does.
It's ridiculous.
Yes, he does.
It's way too high. So I don't know why Ashley's sniffing around it when, you know, when he can't strong arm. It's a bit like with what was the other one he did that with, and he got when he was swatted away.
Mulberry.
Yeah, I mean, he can't bully them into doing what he wants because they've got a controlling shareholding. So I think he gets a bit carried away sometimes, don't you?
Yeah, I think he attacks everything, doesn't he? He goes for, I think there's Revolution Beauties he's in. He's got some.
They've walked away from that, haven't they? Yeah.
And he had a bit of boohoo, and I can't remember. He's got lots of fingers in lots of pies.
It's okay, more what doesn't he have a stake in?
Yeah, I know. We got Hugo asking a quick one on Plexus that you have. He says basically there's a nice rise this week, but no news. Any ideas when they're likely to issue their next trading update or results or anything?
I don't know. They just do it when they feel like it. That's a bit harsh. But I did think of one. Basically, this is in a side pocket for me. I'm just waiting a year for the new strategy and for the new kit is all on order. It takes 9 months to build the kit. That's what they raised the money for recently. So it's just a question of being patient with this. You either believe in the business model or you don't. And there's the CEO webinar recently was very good. He struggles a bit with his... he's not the slickest of presenters, but the content is very, very good. And I focus on the content, not the delivery necessarily. There is one thing I thought about the other day when I was walking the dog that I'd forgotten. They did say, if you look back at the webinar at the time of the fundraise, so this is all on the public record, they did say that they're coming out of a confidentiality agreement in, I think it was this July. So... or imminent, where they can actually disclose and publicise the details of their biggest ever contract, which was the £9 million contract win in 2023 and 24, which is the whole reason I took a stake in this, in that, and basically the story is that £9 million deal was really high margin and it saved the client over $100 million.
Wow.
Now, that is really something to take on board, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, in terms of could it attract a premium bid at some point from one of the, because all their customers are the oil majors, remember?
But also just showcasing the technology. You put that into a case study as you're in your sales pack and take that, hawk that around. And particularly if your customer will rubber stamp it as well, then you'll open a few doors.
It will. So I think that there is that possible excitement to come, but I don't want to sound like I'm ramping it because, you know, the trouble is people buy they chase the price up and then it just goes straight back down again. And, you know, so to me, I barely even look at the share price. I think it's funded now to to launch of these, quadrupling the hire fleet. The payback time on the hire fleet is between 6 and 9 months on the CapEx. It's phenomenal. Demand is coming back. They've got all sorts of irons in the fire. I mean, really, it needs a much, much bigger fundraise. I think in an ideal world, somebody would come along and put 30 or 40 million quid into this and say, right, get on with it, you know. But they, because the management owns 60-odd%, they don't want to dilute themselves. So they really messed up, I think, trying to run it on empty when, you know, they should have just bitten the bullet. But look, that's the past. So I'm quietly excited about it, but just don't expect anything to happen in the short term, I would say.
Another one in the same sector that I know you earn is Hunting, and they just bought a sort of spent £50 million on a sort of like a subsea sort of like hose business that does it for oil and gas. What's your sort of quick views on this? I did the numbers on it, and I think it trades at about 3.5 times EBITDA compared to its bigger rivals, things like Halliburton and Schlumberger, which are on about 5.5 to 6.5 times. So it's trading at almost half the valuation, and that's that their valuations are not expensive, but half the valuation of other leaders. It seems too cheap still.
Yeah, I just don't understand why this share is so unloved. I mean, obviously, it's oil and gas mainly, so you can understand that. But it looks a really nice, high-quality niche engineering group. Very dependent on a few small, large, lumpy contracts, though. I think it was Kuwait, wasn't it, where which is a material. So they need to replenish the order book. That was, I think, the issue we flagged before on this one. But yeah, the acquisition looked good. I mean, this has got one of the best balance sheets you'll ever see. It's really overcapitalized, which, of course, gives management the firepower to do multiple bolt-on acquisitions. They could even, I think they're still net cash, even after this latest deal, which is hidden value because, as I say, they can just buy additional earnings. And assuming funnily enough, it barely budged on the news, did it? And then it just suddenly shot up about 30 or 40p. Yeah. So it looks as if it's caught the eye of somebody. So yeah, I've held this one all the way down. So hopefully I might. I'm getting some of my money back anyway. But no, yeah. I think it's good on fundamentals, so I'm not going to sell.
No, actually, sorry, it's about 4 times EBITDA, but it's still very, very cheap. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
Okay, got a quick one for Harish Harani. He's asking about Maidtech, which came out with a sort of like they basically act as an IT consultant for the public sector and do digitization projects for them. They're seeing some quite good demand, low margin type work, but the top line seems to be moving. The shares did very well, actually.
Yes. Hello, Harry. She's one of my top contributors on my Substack. Yes. Very supportive. Good man. Anyway, Maidtech, very good update today. I think it was ahead of expectations, and the shares were up strongly. We covered this in today's report. We weren't madly keen on it in the past, but given that I think the brokers have just hiked the forecast by about 50, 60%, then obviously that's a significant improvement. It's not showing up today's rise, is it?
No, sometimes on this website, it doesn't give the right numbers, maybe because of the size, but it's up quite a lot, isn't it, today?
Yeah, MTEC, isn't it, this one?
Yeah.
Let's see if it's coming up on my system. Yeah, when we wrote about it late morning, I think it was up 16% to 36p. Yeah, ahead of expectations update. Yeah. Just at EBITDA up 42%. So it's performing well. The only slight fly in the ointment with this is the COO. It announced he was to leave, and he holds 14.5% of the company. There is apparently a 12-month lock-in over his holding, but I suppose that does raise the question, well, why is he leaving? Has there been a falling out? I don't know. And what ultimately happens to his shares? The outlook was good, a strong momentum, expectations upgraded. As you know, I'm not in the business of trying to predict what companies will do in future. I just report on the facts as they stand. And when it was about, it's gone up about a third from when I last reported on it, when I said there were probably better opportunities elsewhere. So I look a bit of a numpty, but the facts have changed. you know, it's just put out and it's performing much stronger than expected. So that's all good, I think. It's got an unusually strong balance sheet as well. That's the other key feature with MadeTech. You've got just over 10 million in cash, yeah, which is about a quarter of the market cap, or 20%. So that's pretty good. IT contractors serving the public sector, nah, not for me.
Yeah, it sounds too political to me. They'll change the rules and the
and there's no guarantee these government contracts are actually going to be profitable. You know, I mean, they're competitively tendered. I think people look at Kainos and think, well, let's find another Kainos, a small one. But I just it doesn't interest me, this sector, full stop. But well done to Harish. She's done well on MadeTech, and that's what we want to see. We want to see people making money.
No, absolutely, yeah. Another one which has made a bit of money, Kasbar Man, he's asking about Hargreaves Services, which is basically a bit of a hybrid, some of the parts. It does contracting-type work, construction. It owns a land division and also a sort of like a commodity trading business out in Germany. It's got a bit of sort of joint venture debt. I think the Harwood boys are all over this to try and sort of like realize value. Shares are continually doing pretty well, actually, over the long term.
Yeah, they are. This is another owner-managed company. I remember me having lunch with a group lunch with the CEO years ago. He's a real hands-on entrepreneur, and it shows, doesn't it? Long term, you know, and they've done incredibly well. Because remember, this, the core business here used to be coal distribution in the UK.
That's right, yes.
They've kind of segued from that into property and speciality engineering and everything. Really impressive the way they've taken what you could have been a dying or dead business, and they've reinvented it. So yeah, we like this one. We're amber green on it. We had we had a trading update yesterday, ahead of expectations, revenue and PBT, they said. There wasn't particularly clear guidance for 2026. It's a May year end, but Cavendish did up the forecast by 5% for both 25 and 26. Strong balance sheet with net cash, and I think it's got a ton of property in it, hasn't it? I think it's doing. Is that linked to the? I think some of that was linked to the old coal mines, wasn't it? Possibly.
Yes, I think it's the surrounding land, actually.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And it's like, I don't know whether it's classed as brownfield or greyfield or something like that, but they're effectively developing. It's a bit like, I mean, just round here, you've got Longbridge, which was like a 50-acre site they put 5,000 homes on. And I think it's a similar sort of thing. Eventually, they're going to be able to put affordable homes and social homes. But when you're putting that, when you're literally 10,000 houses on, it takes a decade to do it properly.
Yes. Yes. Oh, Longbridge. Yeah, that was the Austin, wasn't it? The
mini. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was an absolute dog end of a place.
Was that the one where they built a huge tunnel over the road?
No,
so they could send the half-made bodies on a conveyor belt over the...
That's right. It was basically a bridge. They built a bridge and they had this tunnel. Right.
I mean, with Hargreaves Services, John again wrote a section on this for me yesterday. You've got a yield of over 5%. You're only paying a small premium to net tangible asset value, so it's asset-backed as well. So John's concluded here it's had a good recent run, but it's still good value, we think. Yeah. So, yeah, we like.
Yeah, I've spoken to Christopher Mills and Judith McKenzie at Downing, and both of them deep value investors. They love it, and it's just a long-term sort of like a compound of this one, I think. They'll realize value. So
I think they're right. What sort of price target have they got on it then, out of interest?
I can't remember. It was well over nine. I think it was about £9.50 was their view as a minimum of what the sum of the parts was going to be.
But, sort of 30-35% upside on it.
But when they say minimum, they mean minimum. They don't they're not sort of like smoking it, that's for sure. Okay. one very final question, just sort of like updating from last week. Drew is asking about PZ's cousins who we did talk about they might struggle selling their Saint-Tropez brand, their tanning business, and it appears as they did. Any quick thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I did a proper write-up on this morning just to update the readers, so it's fresh in my mind. Yeah, no great surprise. They basically said today, look, we've had some offers for Saint-Tropez, the tanning brand they own, that they put up for sale just over a year ago. And they said they're not in the right. So it didn't reveal what the offers were, but they just basically said, we've weighed it up and decided to keep it and develop it with the help of a brand partner called Emerson in the US, which is the main market. And they're already working with Emerson on another brand they've got. So I think that that's quite good. They're not leaping into the unknown. As you say, the market wouldn't have been expecting a sale of Saint-Tropez. That's why the shares are only down 4% today for PZ yeah. Cousins. Personally, I'm fine with it. It's one I hold personally, fairly recent purchase at around the current, slightly above the current price. I don't want them to do a fire sale of their crown jewels. You know, I'd rather they develop Saint-Tropez and keep it, because it's obviously an underdeveloped, they say they're subscale in America, so they need a brand partner. So maybe this has been a useful process, or I could be glass half full, sort of rose tinted glasses on it.
I was going to say, is Saint-Tropez a sort of like a crown jewel?
Well, it makes seven and a half million operating profits. That's about 12 or 13%. Maybe not crown jewel, but they're very diversified. They've got operations in Indonesia, in Nigeria, and the margins on this business are very good. If you look at the last results, it's making an operating margin of 15 to 20%. It owns a whole basket of brands all over the world. And if you compare it with the large brand companies, this thing's on a fraction of their valuation metrics. So once they've disposed of the remaining Nigerian business, which is a good business, it's highly profitable. It's going to be the fifth most populous country in the world in a few years' time, apparently. So don't dismiss Nigeria. It makes good margins there. But that business is up. They've already sold the JV in Nigeria, which is going to pay off nearly half of the group net debt. So I think it's the sort of share where everybody, including me, up until quite recently, just dismissed it out of hand. Yeah. No, not even going to look at it. That's why it's too cheap. I had a chat with Lord Lee this morning. Actually, I rang him up to ask for his latest views. He is a former director of it at PZ Cousins years ago, and he did a very good presentation at Mellow explaining why this is a special value situation. And the trigger, the catalyst, is selling the Nigerian businesses, which we believe still appear to be in negotiation. So that really is more important than what happens with Saint-Tropez. So I think it's well worth people having a look into the detail of this and don't dismiss it, because this could re-rate to double the current share price.
I would agree. Yeah, no, good sum of the parts on bundling opportunities.
Yeah, yeah, it's exactly the sort of thing. A Harwood in it, they should be, shouldn't they?
Yeah, no, I was wondering, once I see the white of the eyes of Harwood in there, then I'd be back at the truck, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks everyone for your questions. Thanks again, Paul. Just to let everybody know, next week is a week off. I'm sunning it up in Abersoch, Wales, with my dear wife. So we'll be getting absolutely pelted on by rain and wind, I'm sure. Nothing too salubrious. We won't be putting Saint-Tropez on, that's for sure. Thanks, everyone, again. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time, same time, 2 o'clock, Thursday, whatever it is in July. So thanks again, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. Really enjoyed it. Thanks, everyone, for watching.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.